Joint Committee on Tax Credits for Friday, June 16, 2017 will come to order. Thank you, colleagues, for being here on this beautiful rainy day. We're going to open with a public hearing on Senate Bill 758. Chris, I guess you're on that one, are you?
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Co-Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 758 comes from the Treasurer, and just very quickly, it creates two tax credits and modifies the income tax subtraction related to contributions to Oregon 529 plans.
Wonderful. Mr. Treasurer, thank you so much.
Thank you
for coming today.
Thank you, Chair Barnhart, Chair Haas, and the committee members. I'm Tobias Reed, honored to be Oregon State Treasurer, and I appreciate you giving us the chance to be before you as a former member of this committee. I particularly appreciate the work and the difficult choices that are in front of you, and the chance to talk about an issue that I think we all share a priority for. I want to focus on one of the aspects of Senate Bill 758, and that's the proposal for a refundable tax credit. We think the other ideas are worthy of discussion at a later time, but recognizing the current situation, I'd confine my comments to that one for today. As a legislator, I really wanted to work on ways to help Oregonians invest in themselves, and that's a principle that I'm trying to continue as state treasurer. And I'm very proud of the work that the 529 College Savings Program has done. Our executive director, Michael Parker, is here in case we get into other questions. We've established a really mature and effective program that allows a lot of different people to save for post-secondary education. And we've repaid the general fund loan that the legislature authorized to get that program started, and kept those fees really low. But as proud as I am of that progress, one area where we have not yet enjoyed the success that I think we all aspire to is making sure that the participation spans the state and includes low-income populations. Our team has traveled the state, has worked directly with school districts and schools to get more people involved. And we have improved that, but I think we've still got a pretty significant gap in terms of the income levels and populations who are involved. So we've been working throughout the session with a variety of stakeholders to improve those participation levels, and I think this is one very significant way that we could improve that. As I mentioned earlier, it's a very modest proposal for filers who have incomes under $25,000 as individual filers, under $50,000 as joint filers. We would authorize a $100 refundable tax credit, very much like the political tax credit that many are familiar with, a simple mechanism that I think could really add to our toolbox that our team uses to connect with people. And I will just note one statistic that always sticks in my mind with respect to college savings from the St. Louis Federal Reserve Board study that suggests that a student or a child who has an account in her name is three times as likely to go to college, four times as likely to graduate from college, regardless of the amount that is in the account. So the expectation that's associated with that is really powerful. And as the economy continues to change, it seems clear to me that the path to prosperity requires some level of post-secondary education, and we want to help Oregonians get prepared for that. So I appreciate you letting me explain and advocate for this. I hope you'll give it your approval as you put together the package you're working on. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
For the record, Michael Parker, Executive Director of the 529 Network. I don't have any prepared testimony, just here to make sure that if there's questions from the committee that are technical in nature, I can answer those, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Questions? Oh, Representative Ellis?
Thank you, Chair. Do we know how much the credit impacts revenue? It seems pretty narrow, the way that it's defined.
The Rep. Nose, there is in OLIS, there is the revenue light statement from the prior committee, and the one piece of the bill that refers to this looks, the initial work I had done was about $200,000 a year for the cost of this tax credit.
Thank you.
Now, you said you addressed one part of it. What's the other part?
Mr. Chair, we put a couple of other ideas in our initial drafting of the bill that related to tax credits for employers who might make contributions, recognizing that that's not as well developed as we'd like. We'll note our continued interest in that and perhaps come back in a future session on that one.
Rep. Johnson.
Oh, Representative Johnson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Credit Treasurer. Is this credit automatically then be directed into a 529 plan? Is that the – I didn't see that in the language here. Is that the intent?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, that's exactly it. The credit would only be available for those who make a contribution into an Oregon 529 account.
Okay, thank you. Well, one other follow-up then.
Please, yeah.
And I guess, Mr. – I guess co-chair, this question would be for you. It'd be helpful for some of us, I guess, to know, and I know we don't have a final answer on this, but how much money are we playing with here as we talk about credits? Do we really know? Because as we go forth with these discussions, I mean, in the previous sessions, as you well know, we've kind of been given an allowance. I haven't seen that or heard that, and maybe it's not available
yet. Stay
tuned. But as soon as we can have something, I think it would help provide context to all these conversations.
Senator Hess?
Thanks. Address Rep. Johnson first, and that is normally we do have an amount to give us the kind of discipline that Ways and Means guys say, and we say, you know, we love you, Mr. Treasurer, but we don't have any money, or we can only do half that.
Right.
This year in the tax credit scenario is there's a you probably heard there's a revenue package that's looming.
The revenue that was passed yesterday.
Really?
Is there?
Whatever number would change based on that. And so that's why there's no set number yet. So, and my only comment, Mr. Co-Chair, is that on the issue of employers, there is a tax credit available now for employers who help their employees' kids out. It's just a straight tax credit. And we re-upped it, I think, in two sessions ago. And so it's going to be back up, and it's very small. And it seems like it would make sense to combine what your thought is with that to kind of update it or modernize it and make it a little more user-friendly.
Yep. We'd be very interested in that, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. You're actually proposing that we deal with Section 2 of the bill, and I think what you just said is that 3 and subsequent sections may not be ready.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Let me ask another question. The credit is equal to the amount of the contribution but may not exceed $100. Have you considered the possibility of making the credit half of the amount contributed or a quarter of the amount contributed or something of that sort?
Mr. Chair, I think we'd be open to those kinds of discussions. We put $100 in as a round number.
The way of getting people started, isn't it?
Right. That's right. And we want to have another tool to talk to people who might not otherwise see the value or their way to getting started. The power really is in getting started. And Mr. Parker may have some more to add to that, but I think that's really a powerful piece.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you again, Michael Parker. It's two-pronged. One, it gives us a chance to have a discussion for those folks who aren't in the plan yet that meet the income requirements. Secondly, it's a chance for us then to get them in our system and then continue to talk to them about what they can do to get their kids in and through school. So it's two-pronged. We would not just get them into the program and then sort of forget about them. We would continue to educate them and try to help them get money into that account over the period of that child's life.
Right. Thank you. Any other questions for this panel? Oh, Senator Riley, please.
Yeah, just a comment. They don't know it yet, but my grandchildren are very happy this plan exists.
They will be, huh?
They will be.
They will be.
Their parents will be.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We have one other witness who wants to
thank
be
you.
Heard today. Thank you. And thank you very much for braving the rain today to come and see us.
Thank you.
Marcia Kelly, please.
Chair Barnhart, Chair Hass, members of the committee, I'm Marcia Kelly, the public policy advocate for the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition. Like the state treasurer, I think the idea of incentivizing lower-income Oregonians to save for their children's college education is a really good idea. I do not think that the employer is ready for prime time and may not be dependent upon the outcome of the revenue package, because why would you create an additional corporate income tax credit if you don't have a corporate income tax? And the carry-on years listed in this would be a consideration. I have one suggestion that if you're going to be doing actually, I have two suggestions. If you're going to be doing some tweaking of this credit, if it passes, and that's that I'm not sure that you really want to limit the income level to a single filer at $25,000 and a married filer at $50,000. That it would be, if you looked at just a straight $50,000 limitation, it would allow those people who qualify for the earned income tax credit to also get this credit. The level for a single head of household with one qualifying child in 2017 for the earned income tax credit is $39,600. So I think you might have a little bit better opportunity to get some savings if you could work it with the levels of the earned income tax credit rather. And if you just stuck it at $50,000, that would cover married filing jointly with two kids under the earned income tax credit level. And the other thing that we think would be a good thing, this has no sunset. When it was initiated, it had no sunset, and I know that savings accounts go on and on and on. But looking at things to make it, tweak it, make it better on a regular basis might not be a bad idea. So we would suggest that you put a sunset on it for that reason, because otherwise it's never going to be looked at again.
Thank you very much. Questions from Marcia? Thank you. Very much appreciate your testimony. And with that, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 758 and open to, do we have a quorum? We do. Mm-hmm. Open a work session on Senate Bill, on House Bill 2066. Chris, bring us up to date with where we are and what we're working on. I think it's, I should warn people that this is a time for discussion and comment, not a time for work, even though that's what the session is labeled as.
Mr. Chair, in OLIS there is an amendment. It's the -A2 to House Bill 2066. We just got this a few minutes before 1 o'clock, so I haven't had a chance to work up any summary sheets, so I haven't actually even read the entire amendment yet. So I can walk through it. I don't know if everybody has access to it in OLIS.
I see it now.
Yeah, it's there.
I think it's a great idea to walk through it.
Mr. Chair, very quickly, do we know where the amendment is? Who drafted the amendment?
Who drafted it?
It was a committee request. I requested it.
Oh, thank you.
So, yeah, a JTAX committee amendment.
Well, then you should be able to summarize it easily. Then,
yes.
Because you did it. To help us out.
Okay, so it touches on a few tax credits. So maybe the best way, since I don't have a summary sheet, is just to walk through conceptually. And on the first page, there is the tax credit for reservation enterprise zones. And you heard Senate Bill 145, which repealed the sunset date for this, and advocates argued for the reasons for that. In this version of the amendment, that sunset date is extended 10 years. There was some concern by folks about whether the sunset should be repealed or what the appropriate length is. So in terms of trying to get an amendment before the committee for language for you to discuss and share, it has a 10-year extension. The next portion of the bill is the Affordable Housing Lender Tax Credit. This is the tax credit that corresponds, that banks get to claim when they offer loans or when they issue loans that are below market rates. The language here makes two changes. It extends the sunset date from January 1, 2020 to January 1, 2026. So that's the standard 6-year extension. That's on the bottom of page 1. And then the next change, policy change, you have to go through to page 6. On line 6 is the increase in the cap from $17 million to $25 million. As you heard a couple weeks ago, it's kind of a revolving cap that the amount of outstanding tax credits in any one year can't exceed $17 million. Where the program is right now, at the beginning of the session, the department thought we were right close to that $17 million, but through some work and analysis this session, they actually have, it might be $5 million under the cap. They might be at that $12 million year mark. But the demand for the low-income housing is such that advocates still feel a need to increase the cap. And that's what was suggested from the House committee. And so that is the $25 million. It came from the House committee. That's where that came from. So that's in here. The one policy that you received from the Housing Committee was for this an auction tax credit, which is not in this amendment. I don't know if folks have had enough time to think about that, but that piece is not. That is in House Bill 2852, but it is not in here. So the housing lender has two of the three policies, or this amendment has two of those three policies. Then continuing on page 7 is the biomass tax credit. And generally here, the idea is to move the biomass manure tax credit, so just the manure piece, from ODO to the Department of Agriculture. So you'll see language on the next few pages that do that. On page 10, on lines 7 to 12, there is new language that inserts a cap for the tax credit. Right now, it reads $5 million for any per biennium. That was supposed to be it was supposed to be $5 million per year. There's still discussion on what that appropriate cap is. The language would, I think, and I'm still confirming this, might work better on an annual basis because that's how taxpayers claim it. So it can be lined up to whatever level the committee would like. So the language says $5 million per biennium. The current use of the tax credit is right around the $3 to $4 million per year. So that's a current use of the tax credit. So the policy question for the committee is whether or not you would want this cap to be what I refer to as binding or non-binding right now. The cap can be set so that it doesn't affect the use of the tax credit right now, and it's basically a hedge against excessive or very strong growth in the tax credit. And the other piece of a cap that always accompanies a cap is how an agency should handle the allocation of the tax credits if the cap is achieved. And right now, the language that's in here is just a proportional reduction for all of the claimants. That doesn't have to be that way. You can decide that there are preference given to certain types of taxpayers on a variety of criteria. That proportionality is kind of the easiest approach, and so that's what's in here right now. So that is another policy decision for you to make. And then if you go to page 12, then all of this language from page 12 through most of page 15 deals with moving the administration of the tax credit between agencies from ODO to Ag. So those are all administrative aspects of the tax credit. And then beginning on the bottom of page 15, it's really just a title. It's right now referred to as solar energy devices. This tax credit, and most of the bill from here on, you'll see nothing but bold language from page 16 through page 28, and that is the creation of a new solar energy tax credit. This is based, all of this language is based on the current residential energy tax credit for solar panels for PV and solar thermal. So, Mr. Chair, I can walk through those sections and touch on them, or just leave that until people have had some time to digest this information. Again, we just got it. We're running on a tight timeline, and it just got uploaded. So,
all right. And Senator Boquist, please.
So, Chris, is this a completely new credit or is this like a replacement credit? Can you just give us a thumbnail sketch of what we're talking about here?
It would be a replacement tax credit.
So it is a replacement tax credit. Okay.
Right now the language, the incentive levels and so forth are at the same levels as the solar panels or the solar energy under the current RETC. It's capped, for example, at $6,000. It's taken over 4 years. Current use of that tax credit is at about $10 million, is certified each year. this language in here doesn't include a cap per se, but that the revenue impact would be something along those lines, where it's $10 million taken over 4 years. So it's really modeled off current language, so it is a replacement credit, if you will.
All right. Anything else now?
Go ahead. Keep going. Yeah, I'm not sure how much detail you wanted me to go on to that one. The last...
Well, I know that there's a work group working on updating this, and I think it's a to be announced at this stage.
This really was an attempt to get some language
for
members to look at for stakeholders to view.
This doesn't move the to a different department, does it, or does it?
That's a good point, Mr. Chair. That is something that is under consideration, and Ledge Council was not comfortable in drafting this language with having it moved to a state department of blank.
Right.
So right now
it says Department of Energy.
Department of Energy, but I think there's universal agreement that it won't be there. That's just to try and get language that works so that the policy can be shared and people can look at language.
Right. The Department of Energy, as you know from the testimony we've heard before, very interested in having this handled in a different place. And I'm assuming then once we've got that, we'll have language which is very similar to the transfer language on the manure tax credit involving records and that kind of thing.
Yes.
Yeah. But which isn't in here now because for this draft it wasn't needed.
Right.
Right. Okay.
Then the last piece, policy piece that is in this amendment is on page 28. And it's pages 28 and 29. And it removes the sunset on the so-called Conway fix.
Oh, yeah.
And so this prohibits corporation tax credits being used against the C corporation minimum tax.
That's the bottom of 29, is it?
That's the bottom of 29.
Okay.
There are other changes in section 27 on 28, but the combined section 27 and 28, it all fits together, so it removes that sunset. As members may recall, in 2015, the Assembly modified the policy, or backing up even further, when the Measure 67 was passed in 2009 and then voted on in 2010, there was the increase in the corporate minimum tax. There was a lawsuit, and Conway won that lawsuit and basically allowed the court ruled that tax credits could be used against the corporate minimum tax. In 2015, the legislature modified that and said for tax years 2015 through 2021, corporations could not use tax credits against the minimum. And it was done just on a six-year basis due to some voting requirements or interpretation of law. This bill now removes that 2021 sunset and says from this point forward, corporations cannot use their tax credits against the corporate minimum. This, of course, assumes that the state continues to have a corporate income tax.
But at least for whatever years we have it, use will not be allowed.
Correct.
Yeah. Go ahead. A couple more sections.
That was the sum total of the bill. The effective, the last page is just the captured language.
The effective date. Right. And of course, like all revenue bills, this one does not contain an emergency clause. All bills involving tax administration and revenue.
That is not allowed for tax.
Not allowed. Right. All right. I know that this is sprung on you in short order, but the part of the point of it is that you'll have something to look at. There is a work group working on the solar home
incentive
program, which is a name that was coined recently by the person at the end of the dais, we're not wedded to that particularly, but it just warned you if something called that shows up, you'll know what it is. It would involve some changes in this last part of the bill that would deal with some of the issues that the department raised when they had their testimony, and also with several other issues that will have the effect of bringing the current credit into a more modern stance aimed at economic development issues and eventual phase out. significantly reduce the cost of it. I think, is that a fair summary, mm-hmm. Representative Marsh?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Okay, thank you. Is there anything else right now?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if if a credit that you're interested in is not in this bill, does that mean it's not going to be considered? Without outing one that I'm in particular interest of, maybe it should just be more direct.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
We're in discussion. Now's a good time.
Well, I'm concerned that I think the rural provider tax credit is one that we ought to at least take up. I think that's a pretty important tax credit. Maybe we need to scale it down a little bit or put sideboards around it, but I think it's pretty important.
Okay. I
would agree.
All right.
But it needs some.
All right. Anything else?
Yeah, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Johnson.
Question, and I guess this is for Chris. Chris, is in the amendment we're just poring over, back to the biomass portion, the only biomass I see mentioned is manure. Is there any mention of woody biomass? Are we eliminating that, or is that intentional oversight or not?
The only language in here is the manure biomass.
So the dairy people are doing fine, but the forest products folks are being left out in the cold. Is that right?
I see the chair nodding.
I
think this amendment was more placeholder than...
Sure.
Something that's ready to go.
Yeah, that's accurate.
And I do think that.
Representative Johnson?
Well, I guess the answer is it's still a work in progress?
Yes.
And how would that work take place going forward? What's the best way for someone to make their wishes known?
Well, I think right now is a good time, and also talk to the co-chairs. But right now is probably useful.
Well, I think we've had consistent testimony about the needs for some sort of woody biomass tax credit to help forest health, to help partner with other efforts that are creating a revenue stream that puts people to work and certainly benefits a portion of the state that can use some economic development. Very important.
Mm-hmm. I thought Senator Boquist was next, but he may not be. No. The only comment that I would have today on this set of questions is that at this stage, we're not at all sure that we can pass a bill that costs money at all. And we're trying to write something that we think may conform to what we end up having available to spend if one or more of the larger revenue bills that are yet to come are actually approved by the legislature. So in that sense, everything we're discussing is tentative, with the possible exception of the low-income housing lender's credit, which doesn't actually have a cost this biennium, because if we were to pass that, it would be renewed early in the sense that it would still has 2 years to run on the existing credit. The other one that probably has no cost at this point is establishing a cap and move the department for the manure tax credit, part of the biomass credit. Anything else is going to cost dollars out of the out of what's available for the general fund. So that's I certainly can't speak for my co-chair, but that's at least part of my thinking about why we're at the stance we're at today.
Okay.
And have we lost our quorum? No. Anything else today? But this is everything that's before us now, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah. Anything else today? Please feel free to be in direct contact with co-chairs and stay prepared to act on short notice based on, in part on what happens with other bills in the legislature. With that, we'll close the
joint committee on Monday morning.
We'll close the work session on House Bill 2066. We are meeting in the joint committee on tax credits. No, on the joint committee on revenue reform on Monday morning at 8:30. So read the amendment we just got this morning. I think the -3 amendment, which is in OLAS. There will be at least one more, but this contains most of what we think is likely to be in the final amendment. Is that a fair statement, Senator Hass?
I'm sorry, where that might be.
The -3 contains most of what we expect to be in the final amendment. There will be a couple of other significant changes, but if you read this one and knew it, the changes would be easy for you to absorb on Monday morning.
When are we going to pass?
We'll have fours and fives.
And we'll have the -4 and the -5 amendment on Monday, and hopefully over the weekend. Paul, do we have any idea when that's likely to be, likely to get those?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Paul Warner, let's say revenue. Yes, we are going to have our last meeting with council shortly, so that they'll kind of close the books on the -4 and begin work on that. Putting that together, I sent all the committee members kind of a list of things that we had yesterday evening, so you'll know that what we're looking at. Mm-hmm. And so we'll make a couple of final changes to it and should have it hopefully by Sunday night. And as soon as we get it, we will post it. In fact, I'll just email it to all of you so you'll have it directly. And then we'll post it on OLAS for the public as soon as we get it, so there's a maximum amount of time. And people can look at it. And we've given, you know, forewarned Department of Revenue, of course, to where we expect the biggest fiscal. So they're working on that, too, and we're working with the Legislative Fiscal Office to try to get all the paperwork ready as soon as we can.
All right.
And just first, so there's no suspense on the there'll be identical amendments, Paul, except one will exempt ag and one won't.
Yes, the -4 will continue the treatment you saw in the -3 for ag and natural resources with a 0.15 rate. The -5 will make, and we're working on a precise language, but we will make them, as you recall, one of the terms under definitions is an excluded person, like a nonprofit. We will make them like nonprofits, in which they would not be exempt to any part of the tax in the -5. But everything else would be the same as the -4.
And that gives the committee a chance to review and make choices.
Right, and that would be a clear policy choice for you.
Excuse me.
Good. Anything else? Be prepared to come to the committee on an hour's notice any time after Monday morning at 8:30.
Did the co-chairs want to talk about Monday night?
Oh, what's happening?
Oh, we might have an informal meeting Monday night.
We might meet again in which committee? Do we know?
Did you say informal?
Yes, I said informal meeting. Is that what you're referring to?
Yeah.
Oh, informal meeting. Yes, that there will be an informal event that the committee members should already know about for Monday evening.
Oh.
And thank you, Senator Hass, for the reminder. It will not involve deliberation or discussion of any matter before either committee.
Mr. Chair, we'll have a PowerPoint ready for the committee.
Yeah, thank you. All right. With that, the committee is adjourned. With that, the committee is adjourned.